Good day. This is Mary Hodson reading from the News Gazette on February 4th. A front page article about the cost of higher education. It's entitled Tuition Fees Just the Start of the Financial Burden. This is by Adalberto Toledo. The high cost of attending college doesn't stop at tuition and fees. For many students, it's textbooks, workbooks, online access codes, and other materials that further chip away at their school budgets. Now, about 24 students have taken it upon themselves to demand low-cost school materials from the University of Illinois administration in an effort to further lower the overall price of attending the school. Vikram Sardana, a UVI computer science and statistics major, is one of 23 sponsors of a resolution that will go before the Faculty and Student Senate today. He praised UVI administrators for their work to make the university more affordable, specifically commending the fifth consecutive year of in-state tuition freezes. But he thinks they can do more. There's also this other aspect of cost to students, Sardana said. It's expensive textbooks, expensive workbooks. For some classes, you have to use online access codes to do web assignments. I think it's a bit ridiculous for somebody to pay for the ability to do homework. Sardana and other sponsors who support the resolution are asking university administrators to work on implementing all appropriate measures that would reduce the classroom material costs for students and to create a task force on the rising classroom costs and to ask a question about instructional supply costs in an end-of-year class evaluation. Sponsors of the resolution want the task force to work with the university bookstore to increase the buyback prices of textbooks so that students receive a majority of the original cost as opposed to a small percentage, the resolution says. The task force should also work to encourage faculty to use textbooks that can be accessed online with licenses the university already owns. Senators hope. And student senators also want a greater investment in in-house, open-source, online education platforms like Relate and Prairie Learn, which could be made available to classes requiring online homework submissions, potentially saving money on online access codes. There's always more that we can do to make college affordable, Sardana said. It shouldn't be a pay-to-play thing. If we have the ability to make a difference here, it'll not only be the right thing to do, but it will attract better talent to the university in the future. Last week, Sardana went before the Senate Executive Committee to pitch his resolution to fellow student senators and university professors. When professors suggested holding working group meetings or studying the matter further, Sardana was reluctant to push it off a month to the March Senate meeting. I'm graduating at the end of the semester, he said. For the people coming up behind me, it's valuable for me to have a past resolution they can go back to see whether any progress has been made, he said. But administrators also want more conversation about classroom supply costs. Kevin Pitts, vice provost for undergraduate education, said faculty are the ones who are determining the course materials, and the specific idea of asking about costs and instructional supplies is something I hadn't seen before as a thought or idea. He praised student senators for drafting the resolution, calling it a thoughtful exercise, and said it's in the university's best interest to keep costs under control. Thus far, the university has been working on ways it can tackle costs by focusing on the things it can directly control, Pitt said, like tuition fees and financial aid, which can often go beyond covering books and other fees. For us as a campus, one of the biggest things we can do is make sure the faculty are aware of the cost issues, Pitt said. We want them to be aware of lower cost options, but first and foremost, we have to remember that the faculty are the ones who are determining the course materials. And, of course, content is kind in terms of the materials. In the past, Pitt said he's found the faculty members are asking for specific editions of textbooks or want certain materials to go along with coursework. On the question of online resources, Pitt says there's often a lot of confusion about what you're paying for when you buy an online access code for class. Some online resources are already offered by the university and are paid for with tuition dollars. So when a student has an additional fee for online access, Pitt said, it's usually access for course materials that a few years ago were in the form of a textbook and now are online materials. Pitt said the reason the student is paying an additional fee is because the online coursework is being used in many cases as the low-cost alternative to physical materials. Homework is part of that package, Pitt added. For Illini Union bookstore director Todd Petrie, keeping costs in check is a good idea and something the bookstore has been working on over the years, he said. We've been giving students more choice, Petrie said. We try to give rental, used, new, or digital options for as many of the materials we have, and we've set up price comparison tools. Petrie said he's seen a shift in the constantly changing textbook industry with more and more demand for digital versions of books and online coursework. Like Pitt's, he said the books the bookstore orders are based on the faculty who assign them. We ask faculty members to put into our system what books they need fairly early, Petrie said. You have to look at how many different faculty are using this book. They could have different courses using the same book. Have they used it before or not? And based on what we estimate, how many we need to buy. Once it gets down to supplying books, Petrie said the bookstore often buys used bookstores from wholesalers and expects to buy back a certain number when students are finished with the course. It's standard practice in universities, Petrie added. We have a pretty standardized pricing system, Petrie said. Let's say you buy a book for $50 and we have the need for it back. We're going to give you $25 for that book. If we're not using it again, we're going to give you what the wholesales would give us for it, so 5 to 25% of the book value in a normal case. The difference, Petrie said, covers boxing, shipping, and handling. He added that long-term adoption of course materials is one way students could get more money when they sell a book back to the bookstore, but Petrie said faculty members would have to commit to using the same materials for longer. Organizations like OpenStax, a nonprofit educational initiative based at Rice University in Houston, have already partnered with hundreds of universities to provide low-cost textbooks and free online resources for students to cut down on costs based on this idea. Their textbooks are meant to last, and their combination of open source and peer review to update materials mean a university can commit longer. Petrie said students have so many options to get their books. I mean, we love running the shop here, but there's so many other options, Petrie said. And the students do a great job of disseminating that information of where to get books at low cost. I think students are paying a lot less than I would have paid when I went to school because of vast options and competition. Next article is entitled, Four Generations, Our Family, We Love Our Country. And this is by Paul Wood. About Mattie Gray and her family. Mattie Gray is one of five in her family to serve over the course of four generations. She was in the Air Force from 1979 to 1983 and worked as a firefighter for a time at Chanute Air Force Base. Staff Sergeant Gray, 66, doesn't know much of her father's history beyond that Shirley Young was a corporal in the Army in World War II. He passed in 1995, she said. She is the second generation, and her children and a grandchild also have served. And she's married to a veteran, Leonard Gray, like her, an Air Force veteran. A Dayton, Ohio native, she had hoped to be stationed at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base to be close to family. I decided in 1979, after a divorce with three children, to join the Air Force. My mom kept my kids while I was going through my training. I was sent to Shepherd Air Force Base and then Chanute, she said. I was at Chanute at the end because my mom was sick. Gray was a specialist. I became a firefighter. That was what brought me to Chanute. I was one of the first female firefighters. It was exciting, very challenging, especially being a female up against the guys, Gray said. She thrived with the challenge. I won an award for fire hose connections. I could do things faster than the guys because I had smaller hands, she said. She once left the base to help put down a downtown Rantoul fire. Trucks came from everywhere. That was the biggest fire I ever participated in. The adrenaline was flowing. Nobody died, so that was great, she said. Then the Air Force Staff Sergeant became supervisor at the alarm center, overseeing the dispatching duties. But finally, it came time to move on. I got out because of the kids, she said. They constantly wanted to send me or my husband overseas, but we had teenagers and we wanted them to have supervision. Service became a family thing. Her son, Kareem Rhodes, 42, was an Army Master Sergeant and is now a U.S. Marshal. He served 2 years in Iraq and two in Afghanistan and retired in 2017. Another son, Derek Young, was in the Army and spent 4 years in Germany. I went to Germany several times because they had their family, Grace said. We saw a lot of other countries. Grandson Darian Young, a private first class, served in the reserves and got out 2 years ago. My family, we love our country, Grace said. The kids had that military bearing around them, and that makes them proud. Why the family loyalty? The greatest thing about America is our freedom, said Gray, who's visited several countries. And the military experience? I would do it again, she said emphatically. All of that family service has worked out well. I met Lenny at Chanute, and we're approaching 39 years of marriage. He retired as a tech sergeant after 21 years, she said. Next, we have an article by the Champaign County Crime Stoppers. Shooters who fired into Rantoul homes are wanted. This is by Mary Schenk. Champaign County Crime Stoppers needs help finding the person or people who fired guns into two homes in Rantoul in January, damaging property only. On Thursday, January 17, Rantoul officers were sent to the 1300 block of Abram Drive, where they found three bullet holes in the siding of the home. Based on witness interviews, it is believed that damage occurred during the overnight hours the previous night. A shell casing and fired projectile were recovered. Rantoul officers were also called to the 200 block of Frost Avenue on the evening of Monday, January 21, where they found a single bullet hole in the outside wall of the home. That damage is believed to have happened late on January 18 or early January 19. At both homes, bullets pierced exterior walls and damaged interior walls, but there were no reports of anyone being injured. If you have any information on these shootings, contact Crime Stoppers at 217-373-TIPS. And they also have a website, 373tips.com, and a P3 Tips mobile app. Tipsters are always completely anonymous when contacting Crime Stoppers. All tips are electronically stripped of any personal identifying information and processed by a third-party answering service. Tipsters will never be asked their name. They're given a secret code number to use when checking on a possible reward. Cash rewards of up to $1,000 may be paid on tips that lead to an arrest. Crime Stoppers reminds the public that its gun bounty reward program is ongoing. Anyone who provides a tip that leads to the arrest of a person who uses a gun during a felony will receive a $1,000 reward. And under the title of gun violence, two shootings, and one was hurt in Urbana. Urbana police are investigating two shootings, one late Saturday night on University Avenue, one early Sunday morning on Green Street. A Rantoul man was injured in the first shooting. Police report no known injuries in the second shooting. According to an Urbana police report, officers were called to a gas station in the 2100 block of East University Avenue at 11:51 p.m. Saturday to respond to a report of a shooting at that location. When police arrived at the gas station, they found a man injured in shell casings from a shooting. The victim, a 20-year-old man from Rantoul, was taken to an Urbana hospital where he was treated for what police described as a non-life-threatening gunshot wound to the arm and later released. According to police, the victim and three other people had stopped at the gas station. Three people were sitting in the vehicle while a fourth person began walking back to the vehicle. Suddenly, gunfire erupted near the side of the gas station building. Police said multiple rounds hit the vehicle. The Rantoul man, who was one of the three people sitting in the vehicle, sustained a gunshot wound to the arm. Police removed shell casings from the scene. Police had no information about possible suspects as of Sunday evening. Then at 4:46 a.m. Sunday, police were called to the 700 block of East Green Street to respond to a report of a shooting at that location. Police said they found evidence of shots fired and shell casings. A nearby occupied house was also damaged. Following an investigation by patrol officers and police detectives, police asked for a search warrant at an apartment in the 200 block of Grove. Members of the Metro SWAT team, Champaign County Street Crimes Unit, and Urbana police detectives together executed the search warrant at the apartment at 10:15 a.m. Sunday. No incidents were reported in connection with that search. No arrests had been made as of late Sunday. The Urbana Police Department is asking that anyone with further information, photographs, or video recordings of the area of either shooting call the Urbana Police Department at 217-384-2320. Arrangements can be made for information to be shared privately with police. Callers may remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 217-373-TIPS. Submitting a tip on the Champaign County Crime Stoppers website, champaigncountycrimestoppers.com, or submitting a tip on the free P3 Tips app, which is available in iTunes and Google Play App Store. On the opinions page, there's an article, a guest commentary by Dr. James Leonard, President and CEO of Carle Health Systems, John M. Snyder, FACHE, President and CEO of Health Alliance Medical Plans, Kenny Bilger, CEO, Christie Clinic, Dr. Jared Rogers, President, OSF Healthcare, Heart of Mary Medical Center, and OSF Healthcare Sacred Heart Medical Center. It's entitled, Give Area Cancer Patients a Lift. Cancer is one of the leading causes of death and disease in the U.S., with roughly 1.76 million new cases expected by the end of 2019. The impact of cancer not only takes a big toll on the health of patients and survivors, but also places a tremendous financial impact on many families. The costs of cancer treatment have a number of direct and indirect expenses associated with it. Transportation is one of the most significant contributing factors. As healthcare leaders in the greater CU region at Carle Health Systems, Christie Clinic, Health Alliance Medical Plans, and OSF Healthcare, we have seen patients' treatments delayed due to transportation issues. Many patients don't own a vehicle, can't afford gas, or are unable to access the available public transportation system. In many instances, patients may be too ill or elderly to drive. Gaps in transportation often leave patients unable to get to their scheduled treatments and appointments, even with leading oncology physicians and cancer treatment options here in the greater Champaign-Urbana area. The transportation needs of our patients can often lead to ineffective treatment plans due to timing and scheduling. The American Cancer Society is urgently seeking volunteer drivers willing to donate their passenger seat to transport cancer patients to and from their cancer-related treatments through the Road to Recovery program. The volunteer process is easy and the training is free. The ability to impact and help our fellow residents is extremely rewarding and makes a tremendous difference. Finding dedicated volunteers who can help with this program is crucial to its success in helping cancer patients in our community without transportation. If anyone would be willing to volunteer for the American Cancer Society's Road to Recovery program or know someone who might, please call 800-227-2345 or visit cancer.org/drive for information on how to participation and on how to participate in this essential program. Next, we have a story reported by the Sangamon County Fire Department. Bathroom blaze causes minimal damage to home. This was in Fisher. A Sunday afternoon fire caused minimal damage to a Fisher home, according to the fire department. Sangamon Valley Fire Chief Eric Stalter said that firefighters were called to a single-story home at 200 Broadway Street at 5:05 p.m. Stalter said there had been a small fire in a bathroom. The homeowner had a fire extinguisher and put it out before we even got there, he said. No injuries were reported. It is an example of why homeowners should keep fire extinguishers in their homes, Stalter said. On the sports page, there's an article by Bob Asmussen entitled Heroes Return. Beloved Flying Illini appreciates fans' loves. All these years later, 30 to be exact, the Illinois basketball crowd still reacts to Kenny Battle. Probably always will. one of the most beloved players in program history, sat courtside Saturday as the Illini held on for a 71-64 win against fading Nebraska. It was Battle's bobblehead day at State Farm Center, the fourth of five this season honoring the 1988-89 Flying Illini. Nick Anderson will be bobbled at Tuesday's Illinois-Michigan State game. Battle was introduced to the crowd with about 12 minutes left in the first half. As highlights of number 33 played on the scoreboard, Battle waved to the crowd. Public address announcer Tim Sinclair listed Battle's accomplishments. Co-captain, number 2 scorer and rebounder, all Big Ten second team. As Battle's place in the career scoring list, number 42, was mentioned, the cheering peaked. A hero's welcome. Battle appreciates the cheers, appreciates the fans, and appreciates the bobblehead. It reminds him of the old days when he flew through the air with the greatest of ease. It's just the same, Battle said. You come back in here and you've got that feeling. The people here will never forget what you've done, the excitement you brought to the Illinois and the state of Illinois. Now, living in the Chicago suburbs, Battle has a busy home life. His kids are spread out with various activities. He can't make it to every game, but comes to see you whenever possible. I fit them in where I can get them in, Matt Battle said. It's always great to get back. I look forward to it. At halftime, Battle posed for pictures with fans. Earlier in the day, he signed autographs at a local store. Seeing his bobblehead was a bonus. What did he think? It's good, Battle said. It's one image and it's hard to emulate. But they came pretty close. I like it. In Battle's 2 years at Illinois, the team won 23 and 31 games. There were two NCAA tournament appearances, including the Final Four. The current team just picked up on its seventh win. That was a month for Battle's Illini. He likes what he saw Saturday. They're a young team, Battle said. They're playing hard. They're going to make mistakes. It's going to be a team we're cheering on. We want all of them to have success, and we want Coach Brad Underwood to have success. Every game provides a chance to point the needle upward. They've just got to start winning, Battle said. You can't win 10 until you win 1. They're on the right track. As the second half of the Big Ten gets going and they continue to know and understand each other, they're going to get those wins. Patience is critical. You can't rush it, Battle said. When you rush, you're going to make more and more mistakes. Underwood appreciates Battle's support of the Illini and his talent. I wish we had somebody who jumped as high as him, Underwood said. The coach knows all about the Lou Henson signature season. That team was really special, Underwood said. I've always said the best part about Illinois is we're the 11th-ranked program in the history of college basketball. That means you have great players. The former players are always welcome. Good decision. We want those guys to feel like Champaign State Farm Center, this building, and this is their home, Underwood said. They can come out there in front of their fans and be recognized and remembered. It's what makes Illinois basketball elite. The current players get the history. Our guys understand and know who Kenny is, Underwood said. They know the bobbleheads in 89 and Final Fours. Those guys are very well aware of where he's been, and they want to get there. Could number 33 play for Underwood's team? Oh, we would have run really, really fast and thrown a lot of lobs with him, Underwood said. And we could have used him on the glass as well. Battle didn't talk to the players before the game. The team has a routine it likes to stick to. Underwood had a chance to say hello to Battle afterward. Given Saturday's outcome, the coach might want to ask him back for Tuesday and the rest of the season. And from Sunday's paper, there was an article on the front page entitled, Ushered In, One-Time Kayaking Olympian Diane Smith is Happy to Help. This is also by Bob Asmussen. You never know who you are going to meet working at the State Farm Center. It might be your high school teacher, or a friend from back home, or a member of the 1960 U.S. Olympic team. That's Diane Jerome Smith, a relative newcomer to the area. The just-turned 78-year-old came to St. Joseph 3 years ago with her late husband, Irvin. Smith is an usher at the State Farm Center. She moves around the building but likes to have view of the court. Back in the day, the Hudson, Ohio native was a standout kayaker. She trained on the Cuyahoga River when it wasn't on fire. In 1957, as a high school student, she joined a kayaking team. There weren't a lot of sports available to women at the time. All we had was basketball, she said. I was an outdoorsman and wanted to play sports, so I joined the local club. Next, the team landed a coach from Hungary. Smith graduated from high school in 1959 and trained for a full year leading up to the games. Smith made the American team for the 1960 Rome Games, competing in the 500-meter two-person sprint races on flat water. She raced with another Ohio native, Mary Ann Duchai. How did they do? Not very good, Smith said. That was the first time they allowed women from the USA to compete in the sport. We ended up 11th in the world. It was a tremendous experience. Smith has strong memories from the Rome Games. She met Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, who won the light heavyweight gold medal. He was great, Smith said. He was an amazing man. She marched in the opening ceremonies with the large U.S. team. Smith didn't go back to the games as a competitor, but she was a longtime official in the sport, working at the Olympics, Pan American Games, and World Championships. In 1976, she was the team player for the U.S. canoe kayak team at the games in Montreal. She again marched in the opening ceremonies, and she again hung out with boxers. On a team trip to Montreal, she met the Sphinx brothers, Leon and Michael, from St. Louis. They were awfully nice people, Smith said. Smith made an impression on U.S. Olympic leaders. She was asked to greet President Gerald Ford, who came to meet the athletes. I said, "Why'd you choose me?" They said, "We knew we wouldn't have to tell you what to do." That was the highlight of the trip. There were other brushes with greatness. She became friends with athlete Bruce Jenner and watched him win gold. At the 84 Olympics in Los Angeles, Smith was the director of competition for canoe and kayaking. Smith was also involved in the Paralympics. She got to know the late wheelchair sports pioneer Tim Nugent while working in an event planned for CU in the early 80s. He was wonderful, Smith said. Smith has moved across the country. She lived in Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, and Florida. How did she become a State Farm Center usher? About 2 years ago, after her husband passed away, Smith saw an ad in the News Gazette. Illinois needed people to work football games. I went there and they hired me, she said. The school asked her if she was interested in working at other venues. I said, sure. I work all the sports at the U of I, volleyball, basketball, wrestling, track, and field. She enjoys the work. I love basketball, Smith said. I love any kind of sports. After the Illinois home win against Minnesota, Smith made sure to congratulate Coach Brad Underwood. The next story is entitled Residents Divided on Pros, Cons of Harvest Ridge Plan. This is from Newman by Tracy Crane. At the only gas station in town, Terry Payton relaxes with his morning coffee, sitting at a small table with a picturesque view of the city of Newman. Usually the retired iron worker has company from other locals, especially farmers who drop by the BP nearly every morning and discuss whatever's on their minds. These days, conversation often turns to the latest word on Harvest Ridge Wind Farm, a massive project that a Texas company hopes to build north of this cozy Douglas County community later this year. It's a big deal, said Peyton, a lifelong Newman resident who spent 2 years as a welder on crews that built the California Ridge Wind Farm in Champaign and Vermilion counties. A $340 million investment, the proposed 200-megawatt wind farm would be able to generate enough power to supply 69,000 average Illinois homes, according to Houston-based EDP Renewables, which developed the Rail Splitter and Twin Groves wind farms near Bloomington and the Top Crop Complex farther north. I see both sides, said Peyton, pointing to the obvious benefit, a projected $2.4 million for area schools, roads, and fire departments, among others. Harvest Ridge would also likely mean construction jobs for his fellow iron workers. Yard signs, both for and against the project, dot roadsides in and around Newman. Population somewhere between 900 and 1,000, depending on which green signs you pass. But none of EDP's projected tax revenue would go to the actual city of Newman because none of the turbines would be located inside the city limits. They can't be within 1.5 miles of Newman, but they'd be in plain view, which upsets some here. It's a topic of conversation, a smiling Brandy Wills said from behind the checkout counter at the BP station. She says that she's overheard plenty of heated morning debates over the project, but she's sure the tight-knit community will survive the divisive issue. Almost everybody has an opinion, said Steve Wills, Brandy's husband, a member of the brand X Crush. Steve and Brandy Cole own the BP along with other family members. It's growing to be a bigger topic day by day, he said, adding that there are pros and cons. He believes the turbines will be a blight on the landscape, but he won't be living next door to one. And we'll continue this story in the second half.